Isaiah's from the 40th chapter, you will find some of these words familiar. If you follow along, I'm going to start reading with the 21st verse. Isaiah 40, 21 through 31. Listen to these words for the word of the Lord. Do you not know? Have you not heard? Wasn't it announced to you from the beginning? Haven't you understood since the earth was founded that God inhabits the earth's horizons? Inhabits like locusts, stretch out across the curtain and spreads it out like a tent for dwelling. God makes the dignitaries useless and the earth's judges into nothing. Scarcely are they planted, scarcely sown. Scarcely is their shoot rooted in the earth when God breathes on them and they dry up. The windstorm carries them off like straw. So to whom will you compare me and who is my equal, says the Holy One? Look up at the sky and wonder, who created these? The one who brings out their attendants one by one, summoning each of them by name. Because of God's great strength and mighty power, not one is missing. Why do you say, Jacob, and declare, Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord, my God knows my predicament? Don't you know, haven't you heard, that the Lord is an everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth? The Lord does not grow tired or weary. God's understanding is beyond human reach, giving power to the tired and reviving the exhausted. The young will fall tired and weary, and even the young ones will stumble. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. A father took his small son with him to town one day to run some errands. When lunchtime arrived, the two of them went down to a familiar diner to get a sandwich. The father sat down at one of the stools on the counter and lifted the boy up to the stool next to him. They ordered their lunch, and when the waiter brought the food, the father said, "Son, we'll just have a silent prayer today." Dad got through praying first, and he waited for the boy to finish his prayer. But he just sat and continued to sit with his head bowed for a really long time. When he finally looked up, the father asked him, "What in the world were you praying about all that time?" And the little boy said with innocence and the honesty of a child, he said, "How do I know? It was a silent prayer." I think that a silent prayer may be the best kind. And I recommend that when we have finished speaking and pouring out our hearts to God, that we continue to pray. And that we sit in silence. When I try to do that, I usually think of a few more things I meant to say. But if I wait long enough that the silence lasts long enough, then I find that I begin to have ideas, inspirations, signs of hope, healings or soothings of my own spirit. And those come from God. And if I cut that short, I miss out on a lot of blessing. If we think of prayer as talking, we are missing more than half of it. Because when we are finished talking, if we listen, God will impress us. God will lead us, guide us, maybe even speak to us. Oh, it can go the other way around as well. Maybe in this dialogical kind of dialogue prayer that I'm recommending, maybe we should start with the silent part, like the little boy on the bar stool at the diner, that maybe we should listen first and be led what to pray for. Maybe we would learn new understandings, new hope. Solitude and silence can be strangers to us in our modern land, our modern wilderness. But Jesus found it in Capernaum. Today's gospel lesson, which we did not read, is a continuation of last week's, where Jesus had been in the synagogue teaching and healing. And as soon as he left there across the road at Simon's mother's house, there was a whole crowd of people waiting on Jesus to get there. People that needed healing and hope. And Jesus went there and healed and taught and prayed and talked and listened and healed some more. And then Jesus evacuated and went out to sit beside the Sea of Galilee. He had his own preparing, his own praying to do. And I have a hunch that when Jesus prayed, he was spending time with his Father, and a whole lot of it was listening. Jesus found that kind of fellowship with God by the side of the Sea of Galilee. You may say, well, it's easy to find that in such a holy place, and I don't disagree with you. And yet, any place where you close your eyes, shut out the world, silence your spirit, silence your voice first, and just sit and listen can be that kind of holy land space. Amid the demands of teaching and healing, Jesus went to the water, to the source, and to be alone with his Father. Countless icebergs float in frigid waters around Greenland. Some of them are tiny and others are like towers to the sky. Either way, though, you know this, that there's a good deal of ice below the surface of the water level on an iceberg. And that part that is under the water is subject to the currents, to be blown about or pushed about. At times, the small icebergs will move in one direction and the huge building-sized icebergs will be slowly moving in another direction because of the currents in the water. The depths, the heat in the water, the currents that push them around happen differently at different levels. And those icebergs can go in different directions based upon the influence upon them that's way below the surface. It's the same with our spiritual lives. If we allow ourselves to spend time with God and to open, to be filled, first to empty ourselves maybe of ourselves and then make room for God to fill us, then we may find ourselves moving in a different direction because of the depth of that experience. Jesus showed us that it was important to him to spend time with God. And we should honor that, even when it seems that our lives are very busy and demands are all around us. Maybe that's the best time to back off and set aside time for fellowship with God, like Jesus did. And once you've gathered some strength, you can better face those challenges that are around you. Any bird, especially one so large as an eagle, cannot fly for very long by simply flapping their own wings. Rather, they have to find the wind and fly into it. And the resistance of that wind is what gives their wings the lift they need to rise. And note that they don't take off with the wind. You would think that would be an easier way to fly. But they take off, moving toward the direction that the wind is coming from, in order to get that lift in their wings that pushes them skyward. Is it any coincidence that wind and wing are such similar words in our vocabulary? I did some checking on that this week, and I didn't find anything profound. I thought I was going to find a gem there. Two short four-letter words, the good kind of four-letter words, are 75% identical, W-I-N. The only difference is the D or the G at the end. Wind and wing, both are necessary. The wind supplies the energy and the wing supplies the resistance. And together, lift is created. As close as those two words are, 75% in common, I figured they must be related. And maybe they are, but I didn't find it if they are. But in meaning, they are. They share some meaning that they have both have to do with the getting lift in the air, with movement, or with gliding. It's no coincidence that we use the wind of God for an illustration of God's Spirit, God's Holy Spirit. We'll talk about this a lot more on May 24th at Pentecost Sunday, because that's the day we celebrate the Holy Spirit. We will confirm our young youth on that day as well. The youth are just now beginning confirmation training. But we'll talk about the wind and what it means. The great hymn on eagle's wings. You are the wind beneath my wings is a great, great title of a popular song. You are the wind. Bette Midler recorded it. I don't remember who wrote it, but you are the wind beneath my wings. But we have in our hymnal, God will raise you up on eagle's wings, hold you in the palm of His hand. It's a wonderful hymn. It's a wonderful thought that when we spread our wings, God's Spirit lifts us and gives us rise. G.K. Chesterton once mused that Jesus went off by himself in order to laugh. In other words, when he couldn't stand the kind of ridiculous expectations that his friends and followers kept making of him, he eventually went off somewhere to laugh just to keep his sanity. Well, maybe. But it's an interesting image. Certainly, everybody seems to want a piece of Jesus in this picture that Mark paints. Maybe he went off by himself just to get some peace and quiet for a change. I think he went to recover, but also to build strength for the next challenge. There's a story about a small seacoast village in England that routinely would become covered by a dense fog. The pride of that village was a lighthouse that had been built on the coast, on the north end of the village where the harbor was most visible. And in that area of the harbor, the ships could come in safely. It was navigable and free from huge rocks that seemed to be dotted around on the rest of the coast. So the pilots knew that if they followed the lighthouse in, they would be able to safely come into harbor. One night, the villagers gathered on the other end of the island to celebrate a local holiday. And part of that celebration included building a big bonfire right there on the beach. As luck would have it, that same night, right there in that vicinity, a ship, a large one, developed some engine trouble. And the ship's captain, after checking for his maps and charts, decided to locate the beam from that village's lighthouse and put in at that harbor for repairs. He scanned the horizon in the fog, and he saw the glimmer of light faint in the distance. Thinking it to be the beam from the lighthouse, he set his course to go toward it and find safe harbor there. But as he became closer and closer to the land, he noticed the light, could see it more clearly, and he realized it was not the lighthouse, but rather a bonfire. And quickly he changed course. Later, discovering that he had been only 100 yards away from one of the largest sunken boulders in that area that would surely have destroyed the hull of his ship. I don't know how clearly you think you can see Jesus, or what you see when you look there. Does your prayer life guide your ship? Keep you off of a rocky shore? Maybe even calm some storms around you? Or lift you so that you can spot the way ahead where the boulders are and steer around them? What misunderstandings or misobservations would deceive you and cause you to follow the wrong course? They are all around us. C.S. Lewis, one of the great Christian authors, wrote, the moment you wake up each morning, all your wishes and hopes of the day rush toward you like wild animals. And the first job that you have each morning consists in shoving it all back, in listening to that other voice, the one that brings sanity to our insane lives. Taking that other point of view, letting that other larger, stronger, and maybe quieter life come in. So even Jesus went away to spend time in praying. Good example. Even the Lord. Alfred Lord Tennyson wrote, "More things are wrought by prayer in this world than anyone could dream of." Jesus took time alone with His Father. He didn't have the need to respond to everyone's need. While He was in Capernaum, He was not in Bethsaida. Fair enough. People in Bethsaida could have been healed, but they would have had to wait or miss out. When Jesus was in the wilderness, people back in town were still suffering. Jesus might have met the needs of 1 or 2% of the needy people in the Palestine of His day. Coming to terms with human understandings and human limitations in time and space is crucial if we are to survive in ministry. Jesus did the same. He didn't exercise His ministry on the basis of His need to be needed, but on the basis of what He could do as a bearer of the Spirit. Nothing more. That is always enough. And yet it's never enough to meet all the needs we may see around us. Jesus spending time solo with God is a good model for us to be prepared for the demands of our days. We may run toward people with a powerful message, but whose message is it? Is it mine? If I have not spent time alone with God, if you have not spent time alone with God, we may find we have a message to share, but it may not be God's message. I'm quoting a lot of people this morning, but it was John Bunyan who said, "The one who runs from God in the morning will scarcely find God in the rest of the day." There are two ways of dealing with pressure in our lives. One is illustrated by a deep sea going vessel called a bathysphere. It's a miniature submarine that's used to explore the depths of the ocean in places so deep that the water pressure would crush a conventional sub, like an aluminum can. Bathyspheres compensate with plate steel that is several inches thick, which keeps the water out but also makes them heavy and hard to maneuver. They have windows, but the glass is several inches thick. Inside, though, the pilot and crew can find that they are not alone, because when they look out those thick glass windows, the lights inside the ship are turned off and the lights outside the ship are turned on. They can see fish. And those fish cope with the depths, the extreme pressure of the water, in an entirely different way. They don't build armor, thick skins. They remain supple and free. They compensate for the outward pressure through equal and opposite pressure inside themselves, so that there is a balance and they can go on about their swimming. Christians, likewise, don't have to be thick-skinned to face the world. As long as God's power is within us to help us keep inflated from the inside, we are filled with that power when we wait for the Holy Spirit to fill us, to lift us, to give us insights to share and words to say. I'll end with a Charles Schulz story about Woodstock. You may know this story, but Charles Schulz was the artist who provides us with the Peanuts cartoons, and I think he's quite a theologian. In one of his cartoon series, Snoopy says, "Well, someday Woodstock is going to be a great eagle." And then in the next frame, he says he's going to soar thousands of feet above the ground, but hardly have the words come out of Woodstock's mouth. Snoopy's mouth. Hardly have the words come out of Snoopy's mouth when Woodstock, who's been flying up high, suddenly plummets to the ground and he lies there on his back looking pretty dazed. And Snoopy has to conclude in the next frame, maybe he will be just one of those eagles who just walks around. What's missing in your world? Are you feeling the pressure of life around you in your world? How do you respond or react to demands? Will it be different? How will it be different when you nurture the fellowship of God's Spirit within you to help you cope with the pressure outside? Any pilot will tell you that the lift comes easier and quicker when you fly into the wind. You rise on the wind. And it's like that with the wind of God's Spirit. We run toward God, the source of all life. Let the wind of God inflate you and lift your wings and help you to soar.